And the Lord said to Abram, Go to your country and to your kindred and your father's house, to the land that I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So Abram went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people that they had acquired in Haran, and they set out to go to the land of Canaan. And they came to the land of Canaan, and Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, to the oak of Moreh, to at the time the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, To your offspring I will give this land. So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. From there he moved to the hill country to the east of Bethel and pitched his tent, and Bethel to the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed on, still going toward the Negev. So there was a famine in the land. Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. When he was about to enter Egypt, he said to Sarai's wife, I know that you are a woman with beautiful in appearance, and when the Egyptians see you, they will say, This is his wife. Then they will kill me, and they will let you live. Say, You are my sister, that it may go well with me because of you, and that my life may be spared for your sake. When Abram entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw the woman was very beautiful. And when the princes of Pharaoh saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And for her sake, he dealt well with Abram. And he had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male servants, female donkeys, and camels. But the Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So Pharaoh called Abram and said, What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me she was your wife? Why did you say, She is my sister, so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go. And Pharaoh gave men orders concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. So Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the Negev. Now Abram was very rich in livestock and silver and gold, and he journeyed on from the Negev as far as Bethel to the place where the tent he had at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, and to the place where he had made an altar at the first. And there Abram called upon the name of the Lord. Lot, who had went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, so that the land could not support both of them dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. At that time the Canaanites and the Perizzites were dwelling in the land. Then Abram said to Lot, Let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If I take the left land, then I will go to the right. And if you take the right hand, I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like a garden of the Lord, and the land of Egypt, in the direction of Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley. And Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley and moved his tent as far as Sodom. So the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord. The Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated with him, Lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward, for all the land that you see I will give to you and to your offspring forever. I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that If one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring also can be counted. Arise, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I will give it to you. So Abram moved his tent and came and settled by the oaks of Mamre, which are at Hebron. And there he built an altar to the Lord.
So what do you find interesting?
I thought that the Pharaoh gave Hagar to Sarah, but this doesn't say that.
Doesn't say Hagar, no. We know that Hagar was an Egyptian. We'll get to that as we read here. All it says, men servants and maid servants he gave. All right, well, verse 1. And I'll get you out of the country. Get away from your family. Go out of your father's house. Unto a land I will show you. He says, I'll make you a great nation. I'll bless you. And make thy name great. And thou shalt be a blessing. Did that happen? Oh. When did it happen? How later is later? Long after he was dead and in the grave. Right? Before we answer that question or get into further to the statement, because I think it goes into the 15th chapter, which we are not there yet. Okay? I want to draw your attention to the third verse first. Some of your translations have a different way of writing it, and that's fine. And we even have a song about, you know, Abraham's blessings or whatever. I can't remember the name of the song right offhand. But he says, I will bless them that bless you and curse them that curse thee. And in thee all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Now, the word Abram means something, right? What does his name mean? Exalted one, not just father, but an exalted one. Because the word has to come from another verb base, which is all, Ganal is a verb base, means to grow, become important, to become prominent, to become mighty, or to become a great person. Basically, that's the root word of the word Abram, mean you're going to become a great person, a great and important person. Now, that became true later on, and even in the New Testament, he is still a very great person, a very honored and very respected. The interesting words about the word curse. Okay, just a nice side note, because the first word there, it says, and curse him that curses you. We're talking about the first word, curse. And it means to declare loathsome. That's what that word curse means, to declare loathsome. Not just an important person, but loathsome. All right? And the second word, what he says, him that, it says, and curse him that curses thee, that's a different Hebrew word. And that word is kalal. Kalal. It means to be swift. God's going to be really quick and fast upon anyone who looks upon or considers Abram loathsome or unimportant or beneath an unimportant individual. That's kind of interesting here at the very beginning of this chapter. As we keep on going to the story of this particular chapter, something happened to Abram. And the man was wise enough not to curse him or consider him unimportant. As Kodak tells the story, even an unknown person doesn't know who he is. He did not curse Abraham. Upset with him, yeah, but he didn't curse him. That's just an interesting thing. Now it says, so he left, and he was 75 years old when he departed from his father's place. Remember, we went through last week it was, or 2 weeks ago, I can't remember what it was, where Daniel went through a series of dates, and it came very close to the time of 1,998 years B.C. that it took place. And I had to go back and check my records because I was thinking it meant the birth of Abraham. And it wasn't. It meant that when he's 75 years age, and he went in there, and I came with this 1,999 years before. So it's just a one-year difference between how he calculated it compared to how I calculated it, how when this took place, when God called him out. As we get into this, as time goes by, we're going to look in back as time will give us in the future what time of year this took place. It's very fascinating when we go back and do some research that it's very, very closely related to, let's say, the first month of the year. Extremely close, even to the exact date. Fascinated when we look into that, but that's in the book of Genesis. I mean, Exodus, we're not going to go there today. We're going to, because this is an introduction of Abram. Yes, Daniel.
It's funny you bring that up. As this is being read, as Jeff was reading it, it's more than just a coincidence that the story about Sarah being in Egypt and how that played out was a mirror image or very, very identical to how the people of Israel went down to Egypt and came back out again. The storyline is actually a duplicate. One's obviously far more detailed than the other, but the same principle of that the people of Israel were accepted in Egypt and given the best they were exalted above how wonderful they were, and they became a curse to Egypt. And he would say, get them out of here. What have you done? And drove them out. The same story happens with Abraham and Sarah. She's exalted position. The Pharaoh realizes, this is a curse to me. Get her out. And of course, with the people of Israel, they were given all these wonderful gifts of gold and stuff they had to borrow, and they all took off with them. In this case, it's no different. The Pharaoh dumped all this wonderful things upon Abraham and Sarah. He said, get out of here. I don't want you here. And the story is like it's no different in that they just duplicated a precursor, so to speak.
He just took the words out of my mouth, by the way.
Oh, are you done?
I'm done. He's been around for a few years. He kind of knows exactly what I think sometimes. But yeah, it's amazing. The parallel is so incredibly accurate of a blessing and then a cursing. Now remember when Abraham went down, we're not there in this particular chapter yet, but he went down to Egypt and something was given to him before. Right? Before Pharaoh found out who Sarai was, gave him a lot. Basically, he bought Sarai. Which he did. Paid good money for it, good cattle for it, paid maidservants, men servants. And we'll find out later, if we keep on going, there was an awful lot of gold and silver that Abraham also received. Does that parallel kind of another story? What happened to the Israelites? Gold and silver was given to them. The perfect parallel story. All right. So it's not coincidence or accident that did Abram make a mistake by going down to Egypt? Well, you could say yes. On the other hand, this is not the story of Abraham. What's the story about? But what God is doing. Keep that in mind. So as we go in, we see a parallel between Abraham, or in this case, Abram, all the way to the point of Moses. And we see a parallel. Did God have his hand in it? Or was it just kind of like, oh, that's just history? It's very strong that God had his hand. Remember, we'll get to Genesis farther down the line. Has to do with Joseph. Remember, Joseph had these dreams. He didn't quite understand what they were all about until after his brothers came down. And then he understood what the dreams were all about. Oh, God sent me ahead for your sake. So he held no grudges against his brothers. Although the story appears that he does have a grudge against a couple of them, but as time went by, what did he do? He wept. He bawled. Joseph did. We'll get there when the time comes. So we're seeing here a very interesting thing. Verse 5, remember that when Abram left, along with Lot, he took everything he owned. Lock, stock, and barrel. All right? And he went to where God put it. Now, we're going to find a place, if I can. I'm not a good map maker, and Daniel may not know where it's at either. But anyway, it's a very interesting place where he went. Okay? And Abram passed through the land unto the place of Shechem and the plains of Moreh. And the Canaanites, of course, were there at that time. What does Shechem mean? Okay, he went to a place. Shechem is a Hebrew word which comes from what's called shoulder. Doesn't mean my shoulder. It means the ridge of a mountain or like a cliff. That's what it meant. So he went up to a cliffed area or the edge of a mountain area called, and it was a ridge. Like we have mountain ranges, right? And there's a ridge on the mountain ranges, right? It's also called the backbone. That's what you see, backbone. Now, I'm not saying it really is that the strength of it. I'm saying that's what you visible that you see is like a ridge with a lot of backbone on it. The backbones, you know, bones up there. So that's where that kind of word comes from. The next word is different. And into the plains of Moreh. Moreh means really unusual terminology. It means to throw or to toss or to cast or to pour. Now, it means a little later on, we'll find out, hopefully we'll understand what that means. But this is the place, now, it says, this is where what's called the groves of oak trees were at, this valley he was in, or what we would call today an orchard of oak trees. Well, an awful lot of oak trees were there. Now, oak has a very special meaning. It means that which has strength and endurance. Right? One of those many meanings. At the Shechem, or the ridge, where Abram stopped. Now, it's also the very same place where, in the valley of Jezreel, where the Gideon attacked them. Same exact place. So we know, have an idea of about where that was as we get farther. Shechem's a little bit closer to the Jordan River, or it's the edge. It's not a town yet. It comes later, becomes a place to live later during time of Jacob's life, but Jacob's not on the scene here. Okay? The interesting thing I want to bring into, though, is verse 7. It's different than verse 1. It says, and Yahuwah said or spoke unto. In verse 7, he appeared. Where did he appear to him at? Did he appear to him at the ridge? Or did he appear to him in the valley? And he said, now, he appears, mean he was seen by Abram, and said, unto thy seed I will give this land, and there build he, this Abram, built an altar unto Yahuwah, who appeared unto him. Very interesting. Now, verse 8, and he removed from there into a mountain. So now he has moved to a mountain. Now he's not in the valley, nor is he on the ridge. He is now in a mountain. He's moved to a mountain. Now he built an altar already. And we haven't got an answer whether it's in Shechem, which more likely would have been in the city of Shechem later. We'll talk about that when we talk about Jacob. Because that was a city which more than likely, or that area in the valley beneath the ridge, where an altar was built by Abram. That's why it's a very important city. And as we go into farther into Jacob, remember, Jacob wouldn't go down into Egypt until he went to a certain place. Do you know where he went to? He went to Shechem. And God told him, yeah, go ahead and go down. So Shechem is basically something that God has set up for us to take a little bit closer look at. It's not just a ridge. Yes, it is a ridge of mountain range, or a ridge or a peak of a mountain, or the edge of a mountain. But now we're at another place, verse 8, and he says he's moved from there into a mountain on the east of Bethel, which wasn't the name of the city at that particular point in time, and pitched his tent. Bethel was on the west, and Ai, which means a heap of ruin, that came later because of Joshua's, happened in Joshua's world, and on the east. And there he built an altar to Yahuwah, and there it says he called upon the name of Yahuwah. Now, it's interesting, he called upon the name of Yahuwah on a mountain, somewhere between Bethel and the Jordan River. Because Ai is near the Jordan River, which was destroyed during the time of Joshua. So, we see in that everywhere that Abram went, something happened. That God took and wants us to see, understand the locations where he is at. Why he took them there. Now, in this place between Bethel and Ai, he built, what did he do? He built an altar. Second altar he built. First one was in Shechem, or near the stone, later became known as Shechem, which became very important during the time of Joel. Yes, Daniel.
Out of curiosity, I don't know if you answer this or not, but I figured I'd ask. It points out here in verse 8 that he built there an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. Well, calling upon the name of the Lord, isn't it the same thing that the men, a few chapters earlier, where it says man then started to call upon the name of the Lord? Wouldn't that phrase then inductively point out, or because of association, that means back earlier, when it says back in Genesis, I guess it's verse
it's
2 or 3, chapter 3 or 4.
Under
that process is when altars were being made. That's what that phrase means. Call upon the name of the Lord means they're to start to make altars.
Because my personal thing, I can't answer that question, it doesn't say. Okay? But when Adam had to have an appointed time, now remember there was no burning or killing of animals because that day, sin took place. His sons had an appointed place. And if you're going to give an offering, like Abel did, it has to be put upon an altar. So yeah, Daniel, that's how I'd see that, but I can't bring that into what is being written. Does that answer your question? And so when we have Seth coming on the scene, who is a replacement, and they began to call upon the name of the Lord. Where? At some place where an altar was placed. Now, the first place at altar that Abram put there doesn't say he called upon the name of the Lord. The second place, he did call it, and it's called the name of the Lord. What mountain? Bible didn't explain what mountain it was. But we'll go back to this place because verse 8 is a very important thing as we keep going and understanding exactly where. Later on in the I think it's the next chapter, where God said, I want you to look east, west, north, and south. And it's a very important place. Now, it's not Jerusalem. Keep that in mind. And so, verse 9, and then he journeyed, going on still toward the south, moving farther south. Doesn't tell us exactly how old he was. We all know that, he was 75 when it started. Do you have a question or answer?
I was just thinking of this. The first altar he builds is because God appeared to him.
Correct.
Then the second altar...
Good point.
It's like Abraham is now calling upon God. So
that's
it's almost like, if you think of it this way, God called upon Abraham at the first place. So Abraham
built an altar
to commemorate that.
I didn't think about that. That's a
to remember
very,
that. You know,
that's a very good connection.
And then
that,
the other way.
Cool.
Then this is the other way around.
I like that. I like it. I mean, it's true. Well, I like it. That's a really cool statement. I like that point. Yeah, get a brownie for you. Anyway, there's a famine of land, and what did Abram do? He went to Egypt. Now, wait a minute. This is the first recording in the Bible of a drought. It's not like droughts come and go, come and go, come and go. This is the first time it showed up. This is approximately 500 plus years after the flood. 500 years, not 5,000 years, not 1,000, but 500 years. All right? All of a sudden now there's a drought. Now there's a parallel with that drought, right? Did you have a question?
Yeah, I was thinking of a parallel since Daniel said that earlier and you said your lesson was already over with what Daniel said. I've, you know, been correlating, thinking along those lines. And, you know, it's like the journeys of the Israelites as they went through Sinai. I'm thinking, could that mountain have been Sinai that he was...
No, Mount Sinai is on the past Jordan River in Saudi Arabia, where Arabia is today.
All right, but the correlation between the journeys and where Abraham is going and the lessons he's learning along the way is similar to the... Israelites going through...
Oh, to a degree, but when the Israelites had to go to Mount Sinai, they had to be disciplined.
Oh.
In this particular place, when he was at, we'll see later in as we go on down.
Oh.
This is where a great blessing was given to Abraham. Oh, same mountain. Doesn't tell us the name of the mountain, but we just know it happened. It's somewhere between Bethel and Yai, or Hai-Yai. Oh, where am I at now? Okay, it's a famine of land. Now, is there another parallel, rather? There was another parallel that took place many years later. By the way,
Jacob.
Famine in the land. Now, we think around the whole world. No, it affects, when we get there to Exodus, we'll find out that it refers to, not Exodus, I mean Genesis, later on, we'll find out a certain area of the world where the famine was taking place. Just like it is here, famine was taking place in the land where Abram was to live. What was Abram's choice? He went south, farther south, into Egypt. Why? Egypt had abundance. Remember the Suez Canal? The Nile River? It was flooded every year, and you had crops, a lot of food, a lot of cattle, a lot of everything, and the land was called the land of Goshen. Remember the land of Goshen?
Yeah.
All right. So now we have this very same parallel. So God is setting us up, telling us, by the way, I am doing this. Yeah, it looks like Abraham made his choice. I brought forth the famine. I brought forth the drought. What was he going to do? Go where there's something you can eat and feed his cattle and feed the men he had with him. He had a lot of men with him. We'll go back on that a little later. So we see that Abram moved from his house or from this country. He stayed at Shechem and he built an altar there unto Yahuwah and appeared and moved again to east of Bethel and built an altar there. And then he called upon the name of the Lord. Well, in the verse it said, and Abram going still toward the south. From where he was at that mountain where he called upon the Lord, now he's moving south, farther south from there. Now, Bethel is quite north. Well, we'll talk about that just a minute. Remember, it's not in chronological order. It's telling us a story of what's taking place. We'll have to backtrack just a little bit to understand what we're referring to. We think in chronological order. No, it's an event, an event, an event, an event. They're paralleling one another. Keep that in mind. That's how the Torah is written. It's how the Tanakh is written. It's in events, in events, in events, in events. not in chronological order. It's not in direct order. We'll get to there in a minute. The reason why I can tell you is because there's no place called Bethel during the time of Abram. It became Bethel later. What does Bethel mean? House of God, or house of El. Okay? Which has to do more with Jacob than it did with Abram. Anyway, so he went there, and there was a great drought, and walking into trouble. Now, when we think he went south, in our world, because, you know, we live in this 21st century, right? And so we look at the map of Israel today, and we look at the place that's south of Jerusalem. What do we see? Barren, waste land. That was not true in Abram's time. We'll find out in the next chapter. The south was very, very prosperous. Very abundant. It had more land. There were four big cities, or cities that lived and dwelt there. It was in the middle of the desert. It became that way afterwards and during Abram's life. All right? It wasn't barren and destroyed and wiped out before. It's wiped out after. So we're at this point in time. He is still seeing going south. He's not going south into the desert area. He's going south because it's a very prosperous land. Remember, with him was his nephew called Lot. No, no. South in the Negev, the lower section that we call Israel today. It's a lower section. It's a small. I haven't got a map. Well, look at the back side of your map, and you can look at that. Yeah, it's a lower section. Well, that's modern Israel. It's the lower section. It generally is down in this general area. It's all desert now. It wasn't desert then. Let's go on here. You know, it just threw me a curve here. I'm not going to go there for right now. Daniel brought me something up. I may have longer backtrack on it. And he says, it came to pass, of course, the Egyptians saw how beautiful his wife was. I mean, she would be, what would they have today in the contest of the most beautiful woman in the world called Miss Universe? She'd probably be called that at her age, you know. She was very attractive, very becoming. And what Abram said, you're one of the most beautiful women there are around. And they'll look at you and they want you. And of course, what do you think? What went through Abram's mind? They're going to kill me for you. They're going to kill me. I don't want to die. Now, it sounds odd that he would say that, right? Why do you think he said it? Did he have doubt or didn't have trust in God or he didn't believe God? Yes, Ellie.
If he gets killed, she is the new concubine of the king.
Why Egypt? Why Egypt? No, Egypt keeps showing up on the scene in the history. And Egypt today is showing up on the scene again. That's going to affect the nation of Israel. It's always part of there. Now, when God says something about Egypt, though, you're my beloved. We also know from Zechariah, we won't go there today, that after a while, after 3 years with no rain, a drought, a famine, they will turn to God. That's what prophecy has to do about. And we're going way fast. I'm going behind time. I want to put you in perspective there. To know that what time, approximately what time we're looking at now, because sometimes we think this happened thousands of years after Adam. Like 100,000 maybe. Maybe a billion years after Adam.
Billion.
that Adam's story is so ancient. No way could Adam ever, I mean, Abram have any knowledge of Adam except for Shem. Remember, Shem lived to 135 before he begat a certain individual, Arphaxad, and he lived for another 500 years thereafter. Make a long story short, when we go through this thing, how old do you think he was when Abram was born? He must have been, you know, 508, 2004. He was still alive. He was still alive. I don't have my paper with me right now. I should have written it down. Maybe I got another piece of paper. I don't know where I got it right then. But he was still alive during that time. For he lived 500 years. So Abraham, when he left his father's place, his father was lived 50 years after Abraham left. His father lived for 50 years after he left. So that means, now Abram, remember his first son was, not first son, Isaac was born, Abram was 100 years old. Remember, 75, 25, that's only 25 years. So Abram's father was 75 years old when Isaac was born. How far away is that from the flood? It's less than 500, or a little more than 500 years at the birth of Isaac. Now, I ask you a question. What was the population of the world at that point in time? Billion, 2 billion, 3 billion, 4 billion? Was it maybe 300 million? Was it maybe 400 million? Was it maybe 100 million? How many? We're talking 50 years after the flood. We're talking 500 years after the flood. Population does not multiply that big. So we're not looking at billions of people on the face of earth. We're not. There are very few. And even during the time of Jacob, just a few years later, population was not overwhelming into the billions or the multiple millions. It was very small in a number. We have a picture in our mind because we see the population of the United States going like crazy. But see, the population of the United States is, you know, how long it's been around. The United States did not start out with four people. I'm sorry, it didn't start out with eight people. The United States of America didn't start out with eight people. It started out with millions already living here. And a bunch of Europeans came over. And so we multiplied quickly. Because people want to get out of their country, come here, so we multiplied rapidly in numbers, but not during his time. Let's keep on going here. Now it came to pass, verse 14, that when Abraham came into Egypt, we saw that one. We'll go there. Verse 17, he says that the plague came upon Pharaoh because of something happened. What does the word plague mean? Some kind of disease? See, we use the word plague horrible. I don't know what's translated some of the translations. The plague is a horrible translation in this particular case. It really should say, a great blow came upon Pharaoh and his household with great blows because of Sarah, Abram's wife. Basically, what the word means to blow or to hit hard, to strike down. So we use the word plague. That's overused when we think it's a disease. Well, a disease can be a plague. If you can be hit by a disease from God, it becomes a plague. Well, it doesn't tell us exactly what took place. And Pharaoh wanted to know what was going on. So, of course, he said, look, you don't get out of my country. Yes.
It says in chapter 20 that God closed up the wombs of the women.
Another story. That goes with his son. Which is another parallel. We won't go there today because we're not there. We're still here with Abram. Yeah. What was the plague? Where does it say that? Where does it say it? We're looking at Genesis 12. Well, Genesis 20 is another story about another man and his wife. That's a different story. In the 20th chapter? Different story. We'll get there when we reach the 20th chapter. Right? Don't run ahead of the story. Read where we're at right now. I'm talking right here at this particular point in the 12th chapter. It doesn't tell us what happened to that particular Pharaoh during Abram's time, long before Isaac, well in the age of 40, went down. He didn't even go down to Egypt. He was told not to go down to Egypt. He went to another king. He went to a different king. Isaac did not go down into Egypt. Only Abram went down to Egypt. Jacob did not go down to Egypt. Only Abram went down to Egypt. So we're talking about Egypt and Abram. But when we get to the 20th chapter, we'll talk about the 20th chapter. I'm just telling you where we're at right now. I want to kind of come and take a look and see. There's a parallel here telling us something. What is it telling us? Anyway, verse 1, chapter 13. And what did Abram and Lot do? They left. And they went into what's called the south. That is, in the area. What was happening there? Verse 2, Abram was very rich in cattle and in silver and in gold. First time he's ever mentioned he is wealthy in silver and gold. Where did he get the silver and gold from? From Pharaoh. All right. And of course, we know the story. But I want to go here, and he journeyed from the south of the area, even into Bethel. I went back up to Bethel, to a place where his tent had been in the beginning, between Bethel and Lahal. Where was his tent? On that mountain. Remember? Went from the valley into a mountain and pitched a tent there and pitched and made an altar there. You remember that? So now he's back where he was in the very beginning. Unto, verse 4, the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. On that mountain. At 12 verse 7, yeah. Now, of course, we know, verse 5, that Lot went with also, and there was a fight between the two of them, and the herdsmen of one, and the herdsmen of the other, and was unable to bear it. And look, here's where you know, between the herdsmen of Abram and Lot, and the Canaanites were there, and the Perizzites also dwelt there. Just let's not be a strife. So he made a deal. He made a deal with Lot. Remember what the deal was? If I go to the, if you go to the right, I'll go to the left. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. He didn't say, by the way, if you head south, I'll head north. Nothing to do with north and south. What were they facing? Okay. Why did Lot pick the area he picked? Because it was all desert. It was great. It was more valuable than the northern section of Israel, where that Bethel place was at. On the mountainous area where Abram returned back to, he didn't return back to a valley with lushness about it. He returned back to the very mountain he made an altar to, which he called upon the name of the Lord. He called upon the name of the Lord. Do you remember that Sodom and Gomorrah were down there in the Southland? It was like as the garden of Yahuwah. It was like the garden of Yahuwah. Oh, is the garden of Yahuwah desert? Not according to Genesis. It was lush, right? And when you refer to the garden of Yahuwah, talk about that in the book of Genesis, about the Garden of Eden, we call it. Because he planted and made the garden, right? So it belonged to him. It was like that, very lush. And remember, this is only about 500 years plus after Noah came out of the ark. 500 years, not very long a period of time. We'll talk about that later on, but much, much later. And of course, Lot chose what he wanted to chose. And then Abram, verse 12, dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plains, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom, of course, were wicked, and so on and so forth. Now, they have departed. Now, wait a minute. Lot is already in the south area. Where did Abram go? To the north, back to the mountain. We made an altar. He called upon the name of the Lord. All right, you got that? So now God turned to him and he said, he's back into that area on this mountain where he made an altar, called upon the name of the Lord. That God says, I want you to do now, look around. And he says, after Lot had separated from him, now lift up your eyes and look from the place where thou art, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. He's on a mountain. He's on the top of a mountain. You remember one other man that was on top of a mountain and saw all the way to the Mediterranean Sea? Moses. Able to see all the way. He had good eyesight. Or God just blessed him with good eyesight. And perhaps, maybe this point in time, Abram had really good eyesight. To be able to see a lot of land. How far did he see? Well, he actually saw from the Euphrates River all the way to the Mediterranean. How far north, says to, and later on, we'll find that in the 14th chapter, to the land where Dan is at. And south, all the way to what's called Hebron. We'll talk about that a little later. He said, I want you to walk through the land. He just walked through the land to see how big it was. I don't know how long it was. Doesn't tell you how many years it took him to do it. He just did it. Now Abram removed his tent and came and dwelt to Mamre. And Mamre just means a lush place. It actually comes from one where it's lifted up. It can be negative or positive, depends upon how you want to view it. And Hebron. What's Hebron mean? We know what Hebron means now because it wasn't named until after the Sarai died. What's the name mean? Do you know? It's an interesting meaning. It's like, let's make a deal. Let's make a deal. And so Abraham, at that point in time, and the men of that area, right of hand, I don't remember the names of them, they made a deal. I buy this, you give me that. Well, no, I'll give it to you. No, I buy this, you give me that. And there were seven sheep were given as an oath. It means, basically, simplistic word of an agreement, we'll make a deal. And so you sat down and made an agreement. Now, also something else took place there. We'll see in the 14th chapter. An association was also developed. This is where Abram joined forces. And now, when we get into the 14th chapter, it's going to take me a little longer on that one, because even though it looks very boring, there's a reason why he went to war. And it wasn't just because of Lot. God had a purpose for him to go to war against those five kings. So next week, I'm going to talk about five kings and four kings. The five kings and the four kings. I'm not going to go through the entire chapter of 14th chapter. We'll talk about the five kings and the four kings, which caused Abram to go to war. And when he went to war, something happened afterwards, which led up to Melchizedek. Melchizedek is not an afterthought. It was planned. God planned the war. God planned the battle. And we'll learn a little bit more, hopefully, next week. I have to kind of reach outside of the Bible. I'll use the Bible words, but I have to go back into history a little bit so you have an understanding of who these five kings really were and who the four kings really were and what happened in real history and see why God sent out against and destroyed the five kings. Do you know why he killed the five kings? You'll have to wait till next week. Technically, it deals with the chapter 11.